content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with something a little different today. Let's start off with quotable quotes. The real key to happiness. Step one, marry your best friend. Step two, always, I mean always, have a plethora of wigs in your home. Melissa McCarthy. You cannot buy the revolution. You cannot make the revolution. You can only be the revolution. It is in your spirit or it is nowhere. Ursula Le Guin, writer. Actually, she's a writer of science fiction. Pretty good stuff, too. And this is an interesting one. Blind faith is not true faith. Asking questions and constantly dissecting faith and still having faith, that represents a truer faith. And that's by Tim McGraw, who happens to be married to a woman named Faith, which I thought was kind of interesting. Drama in real life. Don't leave without me. Staying in Kabul meant death for this Afghan journalist. A U.S. naval officer and reporter were ready to help her flee the Taliban, if she could make it to the airplane. And this is by Fatima Hosseini with Kim Gilgard and Kaylee Benjamin French. The day Kabul fell. Fatima Hosseini. It seemed impossible that civilization can be knocked on a few decades in an afternoon. That life as you know it can collapse before lunch, but it did. Sunday morning, August 15th, 2021, began like most other day. I picked up a warm naan from the bakery and headed to the office in my usual jeans, dress, scarf, and sneakers. The streets were crowded. Hundreds of vendors spilled into the road hawking vegetables and fruits over loudspeakers. Apple, melon, and mango? I weaved through their carts among women in colorful dresses. Kabul must be one of the loudest cities on earth. I passed my favorite restaurant, Taj Begum, always brimming with hookah mist and laughter. It is named for an Afghan warrior princess and owned by the fiercest woman in Kabul. She drives through the streets, shouting at the other drivers, nearly all of them men. In the office of Iliatliat Aroz, news agency where I work, phones were ringing as the Taliban advanced toward Kabul, on the cusp of taking over the government. My mother called me, crying, "Put on your long dress. The Taliban are everywhere." She, my father, my brother, and my baby sister were staying in my small apartment after the Taliban had ransacked their home in Herat. She was now scared for me, and I should have been too. I was 27, a bad Muslim, and as far as the Taliban might be concerned, an educated single woman who asked too many questions and rarely wore a hijab, a veil that covers the hair, neck, and shoulders. I was a working journalist, a member of the oppressed Shia Hazara ethnic group, daughter of an Afghan national soldier. To a Taliban fighter heady with Mu power, silencing my voice would be a golden step on the stairway to paradise. And there's a picture of her with her friends and everything, and she's an attractive young woman. "Mom, it's okay. My dress is not that short." She started shouting, "You're not listening to me." What I didn't know then was the Taliban had already breached the presidential palace. Early in the afternoon, I decided to go home, but my colleague said I couldn't walk home without a male escort. That's when I knew it was real. I took a cab most of the way. The shops, bustling just that morning, were closed and the streets nearly empty. At Taj Begum, the owner had locked the door and smashed all the hookahs because the Taliban didn't approve of them. A truck loaded with Taliban flew by. I entered my apartment. I realized that all the evidence the Taliban would need of my infidel status was just inside the front door. I covered the wall with photos of my friends and me doing normal things, eating ice cream, laughing, wearing silly glasses. My hair spills out around my face. My lipstick is a happy shade of cherry. The Taliban don't want to see my face. They don't want to see me with friends from the Asian University for Women in Bangladesh. My education and my work are threatening their ideology. A wisp of hair showing around my face is an affront to God. I snatched the photos and dropped them into a bucket. I lit a match. The room filled with smoke. Kim Hilgenbegard. I'm a London-based international correspondent for USA Today. Fatima, in addition to her work at Iliatliat.Rose, was a freelance reporter for USA Today. Her hashtags to Twitter alone were enough to get her killed. Taliban go to hell. Hashtag Taliban terrorist. Hashtag Taliban never changed. I contacted Fatima around noon, London time, that Sunday. "I hope you're okay," I wrote in a WhatsApp message. "Tell me how I can help." She emailed her passport information, her national ID card, and a visa application. She teched it to the U.S. State Department. The only secure way out of Kabul was the Hamid Karzai International Airport. Land routes out of Afghanistan were clogged and dangerous. I had one more question. Would you be prepared to go without your family? She wrote back, I think so. The next day, Monday, August 16th, I rose early and started messaging anyone I could think of with connections to the Afghanistan. Contacts in the U.S. military and members of Congress, European diplomats, aid workers, and journalists, including USA Today editors, who started calling texts as well. Then a U.S. Navy Reserve public affairs officer responded to one of my messages. Hi, Alex. Asking for a real favor here, I texted along with some details. Absolutely, he replied, adding, it's going to be tough. The airport was already crowded and spinning out of control. He promised nothing, but it felt like progress. I'd met Lieutenant Alex Cornell at Daehu, 38, 2 years earlier aboard a USS Navy destroyer patrolling the Persian Gulf. He had served twice in the main House of Representatives and had a civilian job addressing climate change. Within a few hours, he had an update. An interesting option from a friend in the Ukraine government. They have a flight with extra seats, he messaged. I wrote back thanking him, thinking, we're almost there. Fatima would go to the airport, the Ukrainians would get her through the gate, and she'd get on the plane, and we'd work out later how to get her into the U.S. And there's a picture here of how she put on an outfit to let her blend into the airport to hide documents. And at first it scarves around her torso and waist with documents hidden inside, and a passport and a hard drive clipped to her waist. The back view, she had a diploma and an additional wrap. On her head, she had a scarf tied to cover her hair. She had a backpack, a jeans jacket, and a sleeveless dress. In addition to that, she was also wearing a long chador. My first attempt to flee. On Tuesday, I got a message from Ukraine Special Forces to head to the airport. But once near, I was called off. Go home and wait for word, they told me. That night, I ran into a married policeman who lived in my building. What is your plan? She asked me. I'm sorry, policewoman. I shrugged, unsure of how much to reveal. Well, you'd better make one, she said, because the Taliban have already started forcing young girls and widows to marry them. They will find you and marry you off. I will never become a Taliban wife, I replied. I would rather die. I wait. Fatima. The next morning, I found my mom sitting on the floor of my apartment cutting up documents that told the story of our family's achievements. My dad's ID cards, photos in his Army uniform, my sister's certificates for courses in computers, my brother's certificates from English classes. If they were written English, they identified us as people who might have worked with foreigners. I'd kept a memory notebook since 2009. Inside were my drawings and poems in Farsi and English. My friends signed it each year. I have a feeling you will be someone powerful someday, one friend wrote in 2014. I gave it to my mom. I don't have the heart to burn it, I said. Maybe you can. Kim. Alex Cornell Dahu was working with a friend, Irin Andruku, 33, a colonel in Ukraine's military, to get Fatima on a Ukrainian Air Force jet to Kiev, the capital of Ukraine. Alex sent instructions to Fatima by WhatsApp. Ivan, not his real name, a Ukrainian Special Forces soldier, was assigned to find Fatima at the airport and get her through the gate. Saying goodbye. Fatima. On Thursday, my mother woke me at 4 a.m. She sewed a pouch into my scarf and placed my university diploma in it. It was the one certificate she couldn't bear to cut up. When I was younger, she'd taken out loans to send me to the top high school in Afghanistan. My relatives and neighbors would say, she's just a girl. Investing at this level will be useless to her. Instead, I became a journalist investigating corruption and giving voice to women. I tied the scarf around my back. She sewed another scarf into a belt that held my passport and a hard drive containing some of my work. Over that, I put on a sleeveless dress and a jeans jacket. I then put on a long chador, a shawl covering my head and upper body, leaving room for just my face that belonged to my mother. I had no idea if I would see my family again. I tried not to cry. My brother and brother-in-law came with me because I needed a male escort now any time I left the house. Traffic grew intense as we neared the airport. The area was swarming with Taliban fighters, searching cars and turning people away. Kim, Fatima's messages were distressing. At each of the half-dozen airport entrances, the Taliban had erected checkpoints that travelers had to pass through before they could reach barricades controlled by the U.S. and NATO forces. The Taliban appeared to have a list of people they did not want to let leave Afghanistan. Once the airport, Fatima would have to walk past two gates until she reached the east gate, where we hoped the Ukrainians would be looking for her. An impossible struggle. Fatima. I get out of the taxi and right away lost my brother, who had my suitcase, in the crowd. A militant chased him, and he was gone. My brother-in-law had gone back home. When I reached the first checkpoint, I faced a huge crowd. Men lined up on one side, women on the other, and fought my way through. At the front, two militants were lashing people with whips and firing bullets into the air. My brother there, let me pass, I shouted in Farsi. Two militants controlled the line. One of them angrily shoved me back, cursing me. For some reason, I couldn't take my eyes off his crazy, tired eyes lined with dark coal, which made him furious. You're shameless, he shouted. Look down if you talk to me. He shoved me with the butt of his rifle. He raised his arm to whip me, but his colleague stopped him. The colleague looked at me and said, this is your only chance. I ran through the checkpoint, leaving them arguing. I made it to the second checkpoint, where NATO troops were standing on the wall. A Taliban militant was speaking, but I didn't understand his language. I pushed forward and saw him raise his whip. I dodged it and hit the woman behind me on her shoulder. I heard her crying. I couldn't move, so I just sat right in front of the soldier. Can you let me pass? I asked in Farsi. Where do you want to go? The other side. My brother is there, I lied. I want to take him back home. I must have looked so pale and thirsty. My voice was stuck in my dry throat. Just let me go. Lost and desperate. Fatima. Alex Cornell Dehu had told me to stay at the east gate so Ivan could find me. I saw people who had been waiting there night after night with no food or water. They wore days of dust on their faces. Mothers were crying. My phone rang and Ivan said, go to the north gate. He hung up before I could answer. I felt hopeless. I am told that the plane would leave at 1 p.m. and it was past 12:30. Where is the north gate? I kept asking people. People told me to follow the canal around the far edge of the airport and then get a taxi to the north gate, which is a half hour away. I blindly did what he said. I reached the crowded area and climbed into a taxi. After 20 minutes, the cab stopped and the driver pointed to the airport's north gate, 10 minutes away by foot. It was past 1 p.m. and I was still on the wrong side of a Taliban checkpoint. At the checkpoint, people were sitting because the Taliban had warned that if anyone stood, they would be shot. Men and women were crowded together. I was duck-walking to stay low. I had to keep moving forward. Then a tear gas canister landed in front of me. People started running and pushing. With tears streaming from my eyes, I stood and shouted, I want to get out! A Taliban inches away emptied his gun next to my ear. I went deaf. A woman beside me was hit by bullets. The Taliban pushed me hard, and I stumbled out of the crowd. Everything went black. I woke up by the roadside soon after. Someone was giving me water. It's salty, he said. I drank it all. I'd had it. I texted Kim Hiljabgar to tell him that it was over and I was going home. I can't. I will die. They open fire. They throw tear gas. Then Alex reached out. Please pause and think of something you love. So I did. Dancing in my bedroom to Bollywood songs and singing so loud I forgot myself. My baby sister's Mobina's laugh. The courage I feel in the morning when I leave the house looking the way I want. My favorite passage from Azadi, a book about India. The little title means freedom. What we need are people who are prepared to put themselves in danger, who are prepared to tell the truth. Brave journalists can do that, and they have. We have work to do and a world to win. I could try to go home, but had nothing to go back to. The Taliban would beat me or kill me or own me. I stayed. Hope. Fatima. My phone rang. It was Ivan, directing me to meet up with a guy nearby who said he would help me. After a few minutes of searching, I found him. He took me to a place where many Ukrainian families were waiting to get through the gate. I saw the Ukrainian flag rose from the other side. As we approached a wire fence, a Taliban soldier tried to push me back. I looked at him directly, a man about my age. The words poured out before I could stop them. God, you are so violent. You don't need to beat people up. You don't need to kill them. These are our people. He shoved me, but all my fear was gone. Look at those troops on the other side, I told him. They are waiting for me and watching us now. If you beat me up, they will come after you. He led me closer to the fence, where I stood as tall as I could, lifted my hands to the sky and screamed, Ivan! Ivan! It's Fatima! It's Fatima! He was standing right in front of me on the other side of the fence. and sent one of his troops outside to get me. The soldier half carried me, half dragged me, and I stepped over God knows how many others who were waiting on the way through the gate. Freedom. Ukrainian's Air Force plane stayed in Kabul two more days as the special forces tried to rescue more people. Finally, at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday, August 22nd, I landed in Kiev. Irina Andrikova, the Ukrainian colonel, sent a photo of the two of us, all wide smiles and blessed relief, to Kim Hilgebagard. As for Alex Cornell Dahu, I was the first Afghan he'd evacuate from Kabul. Afterward, he worked with Irina and other contacts to rescue 500 more, among them my parents, my brother, and my baby sister. After my family was safe in Ukraine, my mom and I talked about things we had left behind. My memory notebook, I said sadly, remembered I asked her to burn it. I brought that, she said. She forgot my brother's underwear, but she saved my purest memories, the one where I found my voice. On September 11th, I flew to Dulles International Airport outside Washington, D.C., the very airport where exactly 20 years earlier, a jet took off loaded with passengers, which terrorists hijacked to fly into the Pentagon. Today, I continue to write about Afghanistan and Taliban for the USA Today affiliate, NewsQuest. Meanwhile, followers of Osama bin Laden and others are still in Pakistan and Afghanistan, organized and recruiting. Women are cowering under black cloth. We still have a world to win, and some part of that fight belongs to me. Wow. How to? Clean the things you never do. More chores? Don't worry. Just add item to your regular routine and your home will thank you. And there's a picture of a feather duster blowing around dust. Tip, dust your electronics very lightly. You routinely change your sheets, but when was the last time you refreshed your mattress? And you run your dishwasher regularly, but how long has it been since you gave the machine itself a wash? Chances are you haven't thought to clean certain household items in a long while. And might not think to clean them at all until they become bigger projects than they would be if you give them a little regular TLC. If you feel you already spend too much time cleaning, don't despair. Many of these tasks are easy to tackle, especially if you tack them onto existing chores. Boy, I need this lesson big time. We suggest routines for each, but these are simply standards to shoot for, not literal homework. To start, it's not enough to notice that these frequently overlooked items more often than you perhaps have before. The nicest part, if you build them into your cleaning routine, you won't have to pay much attention to them. Appliances. Coffee makers. How to clean. Over time, the oils from all your cups of Joe build up inside your coffee maker. To remove them, along with any lime scale, first check the manual or manufacturer's website to see whether either advises against using any particular descaling agent. If not, mix 1 part white vinegar and 9 parts water, or 2 parts lemon juice and 8 parts water. Fill the reservoir with the mixture and run a drip cycle. Pause it halfway to the solution to let the solution sit for about half an hour to break down any buildup. Then finish the brewing cycle and run 2 more full cycles with plain water to remove any lingering traces of vinegar or lemon. How often? When your machine starts to take an unusually long time to brew. Faucets and shower heads. How to clean. Fill a plastic bag about halfway with white vinegar. Use quart-sized bags for faucets and gallon-sized bags for shower heads. Wrap the bag around the fixture so that any place where water exits is completely submerged in the vinegar. Use a rubber band to hold the bag in place and leave it there for an hour or so. Then remove the bag and rinse with water, using a toothbrush to scrub away any lingering residue. How often? Once a month. Oh, I'll do that. That's cool. Humidifier. How to clean. Empty all water from the unit. Check the filters and replace any dirty ones. Then clean any mineral deposits with a small brush and whichever disinfectant the manual or company websites recommends. Remember to wear gloves and goggles if you're using a bleach solution. Afterwards, rinse the tank several times to wash away all the cleaning chemicals. How often? Whenever you notice it looks dirty, and always before you put it away for the season, let the humidifier dry completely before storing it. Dishwasher. How to clean. Remove the filter, utensil holder, and racks. Wash them separately with soap and warm water to remove any greasy food residue. Then replace the parts. Next, clear any debris from the dishwasher drain. You'd be surprised how many crumbs get stuck there. Sprinkle baking soda across the bottom and set a bowl filled with vinegar on the top rack. Run a cycle on the hottest temperature setting. How often? Once a month. Washing machine. how to clean. For a top-loading machine, pour a pound of borax into the drum and add a gallon of vinegar. Wow, that's a lot of vinegar. Then run the washer on hottest and longest cycle available. For a front loader, pour 3/4 cups of vinegar through the detergent compartment. Wait 20 minutes, then run self-cleaning cycle. Afterwards, wipe down the inside and leave the doors open to let the machine air dry. How often? Once or twice a year, or any time you notice mold or a foul odor. Range hood. How to clean. Wipe the outside, then the underside of the hood with a soapy soft cloth. Next, remove the filter and let it soak in hot soapy water for about 20 minutes. Let it dry completely before putting it back. Same trick works all wonders on stove burner grates. How often? Once a month. Vacuum the hood's exhaust fans once a year. Refrigerator coils. How to clean. Pull the fridge away from the wall and run a handheld vacuum over the coils, exhaust fans, and air vents. How often? Once a year. Electronics. Screens. How to clean. These surfaces are delicate, so use a microfiber cloth to prevent scratching, and don't apply too much pressure. A dry cloth is all you should need, but to remove stubborn stains, use a mild soap highly diluted with water. Put the solution on the cloth instead of directly on the screen. Then wipe. Wiping in circles creates streaks, so use straight strokes, either vertical or horizontal. Don't use glass or window cleaner, as these often contain acetone or ammonia, which can discolor the screens. How often? Once a week. Wow, that means you have to have a dirty TV. Keyboard. How to clean. Turn the keyboard upside down and gently shake it to dislodge any dust and crumbs. Flip it back over and sanitize with a disinfecting wipe. And a place to run one of these wipes over the mouse and your TV remote as well. How often? Once a week. Earbuds. How to clean. Wipe the plastic part with a dry, lint-free cloth and scrub the mesh part with a cotton swab. Never use alcohol or disinfecting wipes on the mesh part, but you can wipe it with a slightly damp microfiber cloth if it's really dirty. These tips also work for your cell phone's charging port, although compressed air is your best bet for cleaning that. How often? When you see gunk or when it doesn't work. Surfaces. Cabinet doors. Wipe down the faces and knobs with damp fiber microfiber cloth. How often? Once a week. The interiors need to be wiped down only once a year. Backsplash. How to clean. Mix equal parts baking soda and hydrogen peroxide with a splash of degreasing dish soap. This combination breaks down the greasy buildup that is common in most kitchen areas, but the solution loses its effectiveness if it sits around for too long. So don't make too big a batch. Apply the paste with microfiber cloth, then rinse it off with a separate damp microfiber cloth. How often to do it? Once a month. Lampshades. How to clean. Do a quick pass over each lampshade with a handheld vacuum, just not while the light bulb is on. Use the same attachments you would on other upholstered surfaces. Speaking of this, you'd be surprised how much schmutz is hiding under your couch cushions, so vacuum there too. How often? Well, once or twice a year. Curtains. How to clean. Toss them right into the washing machine along with other seldom washed fabric pieces such as oven mitts and reusable grocery bags. As for shower curtains, wash them every few months or so and simply replace the plastic interior liner when you do. How often? About once a year. Window screens. How to clean. Remove the screens from the windows, use an all-purpose cleaner mixed with warm water, and apply it with a soft brush to loosen any debris. Then rinse with a hose. This is a job best done outdoors. How often? Once a year. Fireplace window. How to clean. First of all, make sure that the glass is cool. Then use a commercial cleaner specially formulated for fireplace glass. It may be tempting to use a vacuum to remove the soot buildup, but don't. It could ruin the vacuum. Should do it once a year. Garage door tracks. How to clean. Run a cloth along them to ensure the door can roll up and down smoothly. How often? Once a year. Home items. Mattress. How to clean. Sprinkle with baking soda and let it set about 20 minutes. Then vacuum the entire surface. Baking soda absorbs moisture and neutralizes odors. At the same time, throw the duvet cover, mattress pad, and bed skirt into the washing machine. How often? You should do that once a month. Trash cans and recycling bins. How to clean. Scrub them inside and out with an all-purpose cleaner. At least once a month. Cleaning tools. How to clean. Finish your job by washing your clothes, sanitizing your sponges, and wiping your vacuum and cleaning its filter. How often? Anytime you clean. Well, let's choose out our Reader's Digest with a really, really important subject. What is white chocolate exactly? Are the rumors it's not really chocolate true? The first modern chocolate bar was invented in 1847, but it wasn't until 1930 that white chocolate appeared on the scene. Invented by Switzerland's Nestle Corporation, white chocolate was unlike anything chocolatiers had ever seen before. Nearly a century later, chocolate lovers are still wondering, what is white chocolate? Made from the same cacao beans as other chocolates, white chocolate production involves a little twist. Chocolatiers take the brown cocoa solids out of the original chocolate equation entirely, using only the cocoa butter. And there's more food facts trivia you might want to know. The flavor of white chocolate can vary widely between brands. Some taste of a rich cocoa butter, some are aggressively sweet, and some have a hint of vanilla flavoring. Keep reading to find out what chocolate is, how it tastes, and whether it's healthy as other types of chocolate. You may have heard that white chocolate isn't really chocolate because it doesn't contain chocolate solids. But if chocolate could talk, it would tell you just the opposite. According to the technical definition, white chocolate is most certainly qualifies. So what is chocolate, technically speaking? It's defined as a food made from roasted and ground pods of cacao tree. After harvesting, the pods are cracked open and the beans are removed and left out for several days to naturally ferment. Next, the beans are dried and roasted and their shells are removed and discarded. What's left is known as the cacao nib, the base elements of all things chocolate. The cacao nibs are ground into a thick oily paste called chocolate liqueur, which is then separated into two different products, cocoa solids and cocoa butter. Cocoa solids are brown, flavorful, and used to make dark and milk chocolate. Cocoa butter is pure fat and can be used to make white chocolate. Even though they're made from different components, brown chocolate and white chocolate both come from the same cacao pod. Just because white chocolate is technically chocolate doesn't mean everyone recognizes it as such. Outside of its culinary definition for reasons of taxation and regulation, chocolate also has legal definitions which are different in every country. In the European Union, chocolate may not have less than 35% of dry cocoa solids. In America, chocolate that contains cocoa solids is defined as sweet chocolate, whereas white chocolate has its own distinct definition. What is white chocolate made from? White chocolate is made by blending cocoa butter with sugar, milk products, vanilla, and lecithin, which is a naturally derived fatty acid that's used as an emulsifier. According to the Food and Drug Administration, white chocolate must be at least 20% cocoa butter and 14% milk solids by weight, and may not consist of more than 55% sugar or any other sweeteners. Past those three mandatory ingredients, the FDA allows white chocolate to be made with any or all of the following ingredients: emulsifiers, spices, natural and or artificial flavorings, nuts, coffee, malt, salt, antioxidants. The most common flavoring used in white chocolate is vanilla, but manufacturers are allowed to use most of any sort of flavoring they wish. However, the FDA does not allow white chocolate to be flavored with anything that tastes like chocolate, milk, or butter. So what does white chocolate taste like? A high-quality white chocolate bar will taste rich and buttery with notes of sweet cream and a luxurious, velvety mouthfeel. Many white chocolates have a hint of vanilla flavoring, which help intensify the flavor of the cocoa butter. Lower quality white chocolate is sweeter, as it contains more sugar, which is cheap, and less cocoa butter and dairy, which are more expensive. White chocolate versus milk chocolate. White chocolate contains milk and cocoa butter, just like milk chocolate does. But milk chocolate also contains at least 10% chocolate solids, whereas white chocolate has none. As for the other types of chocolate, semi-sweet contains about 60% chocolate solids, while bittersweet and dark chocolate contains 70% or more. Is white chocolate healthier? While it's true that chocolate does have some health benefits, it's difficult to make the argument that white chocolate is a health food. Even though it contains cocoa butter, which is high in vitamin D2, potassium and phosphorus, iron, copper, and magnesium, its primary ingredient in white chocolate is sugar. In other words, an alternate answer to the question, what is white chocolate, is this, an occasional indulgence. Chocolate's most substantial health benefits come from the flavonoids in cocoa solids. So as a clue, the darker the chocolate, the better. If you're eating chocolate for your health, stick to dark chocolate with a cocoa percentage of 70% or more. Keep learning around all your sweetmeat treats by reading up on the history of ice cream and learn about milky marshmallow recipes, milk, and cookies. And with that, let's switch over to the consumer reports. And let's look at the, we're closing out little letters here, so we had a couple letters left to do for the last time, so let's do that. Which uses more gas, having the AC on or keeping the windows open? How to stretch a tank of gas in April of 2022 read that the drag from open windows if you are driving above 35 to 40 miles per hour is worse than the use of the air conditioner for fuel consumption. Do you know anything about that? Using an inline fuel meter that precisely measures its gas consumption, we tested air conditioning versus leaving the windows down in a Ford Focus, a Honda Accord, and a Subaru Forester. We found that driving while the AC on consumes slightly more fuel than just cracking the windows. Although the higher speed is about 65 miles per hour, the difference between the two was negligible. So technically, leaving windows open uses less gas. But we think on a very hot day, the added comfort from the AC is worth the slight rise in fuel consumption. Now that's interesting because I've always heard the opposite. Okay, what are we testing in our labs? In our 63 labs, we continue reviewing and rate products. Here are timely picks for this month. Blenders. We tested 75 models. We test for how well a blender can crush ice and make frozen drinks, and how well it can puree soup, ease of use, and more. The median score was 67. It ranged from 26 to 88. Excellent smoothie maker with a 7-year warranty is the Vitamix 5200 at $450, scored at 84. Reliable blend and graded pureeing. Wolf Gourmet High Performance WGBL 1005. That is $700, scored 79. Stellar performance at a bargain price. Instant Ace at $120, scored a 77. So almost at $120, it scored a 2 points less than the $700 model. Ooh. Inverter generators. We tested 20 models. We test for a generator's ability to deliver power with consistent voltage and deal with surges in power demand, how easy it is to use, noise level, and more. The median score was 69, ranging from 32 to 85. Budget-friendly mid-size model, the Ryobi RI4022X, generates 3,400 watts and costs $600, scored an 84. Powerful and large, the Predator 9500 with CO Secure, it generates 7,600 watts and costs $2,300, got a 79. Smart Space Saver, DeWalt GN2200, does 700 watts at $650, and the overall score for that was 75. Are small inverters powerful enough to help with a power outage? Those compact inverter generators, usually about a foot wide, are often thought of as great portable power source for camping or tailgating, but they're also a big help during an outage. Most offer between 1,000 and 2,000 watts, enough to power your fridge, 700 watts, about 5 lights, 250 watts, a laptop, 200 watts, and a plug-in fan or phone charger, 220 watts. At the same time, for up to 10 or so hours per tank, if you need to run more appliances or you're hoping to power window air conditioner, at least 1,000 watts, or sump pump, 900 watts, along with your fridge, you'd be better off with a mid-sized generator such as the Ryobi, which offers more power, 3,400 watts, for about the same price as the smaller models. Dehumidifiers. We tested 49 models. The model's ability to remove water from the air when it's 65 degrees Fahrenheit with 60% humidity, the accuracy of the humistat features, and more. The median score was 67. It ranged from 30 to 81. But the score of 80 was the large capacity was the GE Adel ADAW45 at Walmart for $230. Great for small rooms with the TCL TDW20E, $150, and scored a 77. Scoring a 74 for quiet and mid-sized, the Toshiba TDP at $170. Home security camera deals, 44 wireless motors, models. Video quality is tested for, as well as smart features, work, how quickly homeowners are alerted when motion is detected, and more. The median was 61, the range was 42 to 81. Scoring a 74 was the top value, the Lorex 2X Pan Tilt Wi-Fi at $70. A 73 score was the speedy notifications with the TP-Link Casa KC120 at $50. And a 72 worked for the Apple HomeKit, YourFi Solo Indoor Cam at $40. Electronic string trimmers, which are suitable for this time of year, obviously. We tested 44 battery and corded electric bottles. We test for how quickly and neatly bottles trim and edges grass around walkways, ability to cut through weeds, and more. The scores run from a median of 80 to a range from 42 to 92, so most of them scored pretty high. The best battery trimmer with a score of 92 was EGO ST150, and it looks pretty like a pretty cool thing, easy to handle and everything. Lightweight battery trimmer for less is the Cobalt at Lowe's, KST, at $150, and it scored an 88. Top corded trimmer was the Ryobi Y4100 at $90, and it scored a 77. Summer tires. We tested 23 ultra-high-performance models. We test for braking in both dry and wet conditions, handling, ride comfort, nose, rolling resistance, tread life, and more. Medium score of 67, range was 57 to 76. The best performance overall was the Michelin Pilot Sport 4S at $222. It scored a 76. The super quiet rod was the Continental Extreme Contact Sport at $176, and it scored a 75. Great price, General G-Max RS at $139, and it scored a 75. The right air conditioner for your space. Hang on a second. I have page stick together here. That's not what I want on the next page. Sorry about that. And there's things. Ask our experts. Costco Wholesale. Should I be a member of Costco or Sam's Club to save money on gas? It's probably a good idea. At these membership clubs, which include BJ's, Costco's, Sam's Clubs, and others, you'll typically pay anywhere from 5 to 25 cents per gallon less than the average price of other gas stations. And that's true. I'm a member of BJ's, and that's normally what I save, anywhere from 8 cents to 22 cents the last couple times. That's a big savings, given the sharp rise in gas prices. Reading as high as $5.91 per gallon in California. Actually, I saw stickers for $6.75. It's lucky that over the course of a year of driving, the savings would even cover the cost of these clubs' annual membership fees, which range from $45 to $120 per year. You can save even more by signing up for Warehouse Club's credit card, because they can be used at any gas station that takes major credit cards. Costco's Visa card pays a 4% back tax on gas at any gas station up to $7,000 per year. Sam Clubs offers a MasterCard that pays 5% cash back up to $6,000 annual cap. Plus, Costco stations offer top-tier gasoline, meaning their gas meets higher-than-required detergent standards. Filling up with top-tier gas can help keep an engine running smoothly, according to the AAA study. Keep in mind that with so many people looking to save on gas, there can be long lines at these discounted pumps. But there's little risk to trying out a membership. BJ's, Costco, and Sam's Clubs will let you cancel at any time and get a refund for the unused months of your membership. Are those natural flavors touted on soda labels better for me than the artificial ones? Not necessarily, according to Michael Hansen, Ph.D., senior scientist at Consumer Reports. There's no real difference between natural and artificial flavors in terms of nutrition. Natural flavors defined by the Food and Drug Administration, means that a flavoring comes from a plant or animal source. But those flavors aren't always derived from the ingredients whose taste they mimic. Science extracts chemicals from these natural sources in the lab, but they can use synthetic solvents and artificial preservatives and processing aids to do that. The natural flavors used in organic foods may be preferable because organic regulations state that they can't be made with synthetic solvents or artificial preservatives. Creating an artificial flavor is a similar process. The only difference is the flavor compounds that are developed in a lab rather than taken from a plant or an animal. Both natural and artificial flavors are probably safe for most of us to consume, Hansen says. But because the specific ingredients generally aren't reviewed by the FDA, and companies are usually not required to disclose the ingredients of natural or artificial flavors on food labels, it's difficult to know for sure. For this reason, people with food allergies should be particularly careful when consuming food or drinks that have your natural or artificial flavorings. Why do some of my clothes have white streaks after I wash them? Am I using the wrong detergent? It might not be the branded detergent you're using, but how much of it you're adding to your wash load. You might be using too much concentrated detergent or fabric softener per load, especially when combined with the low water levels of today's more efficient washing machines. Other reasons may include complete rinsing, hard water, and an overloaded washing machine. When you load a washer with too much laundry, the items don't agitate one another sufficiently, which is what helps to remove the dirt and detergent residue. That chalky residue left over from detergents can also result in itching and rashes if you have allergy or sensitive skin. To remove detergent buildup from your laundry, put clothing and other items without detergent into a rinse and spin cycle if you have a front loader, or a deep soak and spin if you're a top loader, says Rich Handel, CR's washing machine expert. And to prevent buildup in the future, cut back on the amount of detergent used. Try using just 1.5 ounces of detergent per load to start. Use less fabric softener, too, or skip it altogether because a little can remain embedded in the fabrics. Finally, don't overload your washing machine. Insights from Consumer Reports. How to grill the perfect burger. Oh, it's time for that this time of year. Every year, our experts rigorously test dozens of new grills to help you find the very best equipment to suit your cookout style. We've hand-picked some top performers here that you're sure to love. But if you're in pursuit of the perfectly cooked burger, you need more than a great grill. You also want a time-tested recipe and method. CR's grilling expert and trained culinary chef, Paul Hope, has made thousands of burgers in his quest for perfection. Here are his best tips. Craft a great patty. For beef burgers, Hope typically uses 80% lean, 20% fat ground beef patties. Shape the meat into 5-ounce patties, roughly 4 inches across. Then make a slight indentation in the top center of each one with your thumb, which keeps the patties from shrinking while cooking. Keep them chilled. Not ready to grill yet? Put the patties in the fridge to minimize any threat of bacteria, especially on a hot day. Plus, refrigerating patties for 30 minutes before cooking can help them return their shape on the grill. Preheat. If you're using a gas grill, set it to medium heat, 300 to 400 degrees. Close the lid and wait 10 minutes. The patties cook more quickly and consistently if you preheat, Hope says. Before you flip them, right before the burgers hit the grill, sprinkle salt and pepper on one side of each patty and place that side down on the grill first. As they cook, season the other side before flipping. Seasoning a patty too far in advance pulls liquid from the meat, producing a dry burger. They should take about 3 to 4 minutes per side for a juicy but well-cooked burger with distinct grill marks. And they list 4 different grills here. The mid-sized grass grill, the Even Embers at $565, scored an 80. The on-the-go grilling, the Coleman Road Trip at $290, scored a 74. For a ceramic grill, the Pit Boss K22 Ceramic Charcoal Grill scored a 70. And budget-friendly charcoal was the Weber 22-inch tub grill at 67 score. The right air conditioner for your space. Oh, you need that this time of year, obviously. When looking for a window air conditioner, don't just seek out the highest number of British thermal units, or BTU. Instead, calculate the size of the space you want to cool, our experts say. That's because a powerful air conditioner placed in a small room cools it so quickly that it doesn't have time to remove enough moisture from the air, leaving it with a cold, clammy place rather than a cool, dry one. To find the ideal power level for any room, multiply the length of the room by the width to get an approximate square footage. Then match that number with the small, medium, and large BTU range approximation shown in the chart we'll look at in a second, along with some nicely priced models we've tested. If more than 2 people regularly occupy the room, add 600 BTU for each additional person. And if the unit is for a kitchen, add 4,000 BTU because ranges add a fair amount of heat. For a small room of 100 to 250 square feet, 5,000 to 6,500 BTU. And the one they rich is the Midyi MAW, scored a 73, it costs $220, and the BTUs are 6,000. Comfort is 4 out of 5, ease of use is 4 out of 5. Brownout, this test gauges the unit's ability to run and restart during periods of extreme heat and low voltage. That's interesting. That's a 5 of 5. Indoor noise low, 4 out of 5. Indoor noise high, 3 out of 5. Medium room, 250 to 350 square feet, 7,000 to 8,500 BTU. The TCL TAW08 from Walmart. The overall score is 62, $240. BTU is 8,000. Comfort is 3 out of 5. Ease of use is 4 out of 5. Brownout is 5 out of 5. By all of them, the brownouts are 5 out of 5. Indoor noise low, 3 out of 5. Indoor noise high, 2 out of 5. So it's kind of noisy, even though it's cheap. Large room, 350 to 550 square feet. That's 9,800 to 12,000 BTU. And that's the Haier, H-A-I-E-R, QHNG10 at Target, 71 is the score. And its price is $310. It has a 10,000 BTU. Comfort is 4 out of 5. Ease of use is 4 out of 5. Brownout is 5 out of 5. Noise indoor low is 3 out of 5. Indoor noise high is 3 out of 5. And then we have the Time Traveler, Pots and Pans. In 1925, the Le Creuset foundry opens in France and forges its original cast iron Dutch oven coated in colorful enamel. The first collar created is called Volcanicule, now the company's signature flame. In 1940, CR publishes Look Before You Cook, a recipe collection that includes expert advice on caring for pots and pans. Tefal, 1956. Tefal is founded and soon becomes the first creator of nonstick frying pans, according to company lore. In 1967, in CR's test of over 80 pots and pans, the lowest rated ones don't heat evenly, serving up pancakes with uncooked centers and burned edges. In 1972, fondue pots are hot. Boy, I remember those. We test electric ones and recommended a $20 Ward's pot for its convenience and safety. That's kind of died out. I hope that comes back soon. Fondue's fun. 1981, we test cookware made from microwave ovens and found that shape matters. Round pans are best. The corners of rectangular pans overcook food. In 1990, Electric Rangers now offer solid disc burners, but we discovered that the bottom of the pan isn't as straight as a ruler. It won't heat very well. 2002, Lodge Cast Iron debuts new pre-season cast iron pans by baking soybean oil into them at its foundry just to prevent rust. 2011, CR investigates reports of glass bakeware shattering. We test a few brands by heating the glass to 450 degrees Fahrenheit, then placing them on a wet surface, causing some to shatter. Ooh. Martha Stewart collection of hard enameled pans at $40. In 2022, we tested celebrity cookware and find that some lines are good, others not so much. One of the better pans is from Martha Stewart above. Smart tips for growing your own herbs. Dreaming of sipping mojitos with fresh mint this summer? It's easy to grow your own mint, and it's also a great money saver. Organic mint leaves, for example, can cost $4 an ounce at Walmart, while mint plants sell for about $7 and should provide fresh leaves all season long if properly cared for. Use these quick tips to start your edible garden and keep it thriving. Know your sun level. Before you buy starter plants or seeds, assess how much direct sunlight will hit your intended planting spot. Many herbs need full sun, which means at least 6 hours of sun each day. An herb that specifies partial sunshade requires between 3 and 6 hours of sun, for example. Basil does well in full 6 to 8 hours of sun, while mint likes a little less sun, only 4 or 5 hours. Keep the herbs separated. If you plant more than one type of herb, keep each one in its own patch or pot because watering needs different. Basil, for example, benefits from consistently moist soil. Separation also helps to keep quickly spreading herbs such as mint from overtaking other plants. Mint should always be planted in a pot because its roots can spread so rapidly. Promote good drainage. If you're using pots, pick ones with a drainage hole that sits on top of a reservoir to catch excess water. You can also put a few rocks at the bottom of the pot to help the soil drain better and prevent root rot. Strengthen your soil. Adding your own compost to the soil around herbs is a great way to keep it rich and moist. You can compost even if you have no outdoor space. Considering a compact composter, like the Bionicraft BioVessel Composter at $199, it works well and easy fits on a countertop or shelf. For new plants, add a 2-inch layer on top of the beds to start, then add small amounts, perhaps a handful of compost, once a month or so. Beware of heavy metals. If you intend to plant your herbs outside, it's important to find out whether there are heavy metals such as lead in your local soil and water, because they can find their way into your herbs. You can buy a soil testing kit at many hardware stores or online. For advice on testing and gathering, filling your water, go to cr.org/water test. If you're buying soil for your herbs, look for a product that carries an OMRI-listed seal, which means it is assessed for heavy metals by the Organic Materials Review Institute. Dining out. Secrets to healthier smoothies. For a fast, nutritious snack or meal, a smoothie may seem like a great idea. but many of the concoctions on menus at smoothie and other fast food chains may not be all that healthy. In fact, our evaluation of the smoothie offerings at four chains, the good-for-you options were surprisingly hard to find. The ideal smoothie is made from the whole fruits and vegetables, unsweetened dairy or plant milk or yogurt, and maybe some healthy add-ins like nut butter or seeds, says CR nutritionist Amy Keating, registered dietitian. But many smoothies are evaluated contain loads of added sugar such as agave, sweetened plant milks, and raw sugar. Unfortunately, chain restaurants aren't required to list the amount of added sugars they use, Keating says. Of the chains we looked at, only Smoothie King listed added sugars on its website. So it's hard to tell whether your smoothie's sugar content is coming from natural sources like fruit or other less healthy ingredients. To make you make better choices, our experts share three tips for smarter ordering and some good menu picks. Look for whole fruits and veggies in the ingredients list. A drink that lists whole produce first is your best bet. Few purees, like those in a Panera Bread drink at Wright, which we'll look at, can be a fine choice too. Fruit juices aren't a bad option as long as they can 100% juice, which contain no added sugars. Make substitutions. Some chains, particularly those that specialize in smoothies, may be amenable to making ingredient swaps. When you see a sweetener like agave, ask to leave it out or replace it with some fresh pineapple to add sweetness and zest, says Keating. Skip the add-on boosts. Some chains offer boosts or supplements or enhancers, but often don't disclose exactly what's in them. They're generally not necessary. If a smoother is mostly produce, you're getting a variety of nutrients already. At Jamba, strawberries gone banana, the serving size is 10 ounces. Contains apple strawberry, 100% juice blend, frozen strawberries, and frozen bananas. Has 150 calories, no fat, no saturated fat, 36 carbs, total sugars are 27 grams, fiber 3 grams, and protein 1 gram. We like it. The kids' menu smoothie is smaller than the chain's 16-ounce small, which keeps the calories low. It's made with juice and fruit, no added sugars. Ask to add in a protein-containing whole food like non-fat Greek yogurt or peanut butter to make it more satisfying. Tropical Smoothie Cafe, Detox Island Green, 24 ounces, contains spinach, kale, mango, pineapple, banana, and fresh ginger. 180 calories, no saturated fat, 43 carbs, total sugars are 29 grams, fiber 5 grams, protein 4 grams. Why we like it? This was the only smoothie in this chain's menu that did not contain turbinado sugar, raw sugar. This drink won't detox you, but it is made from all produce, no juice. If you order other smoothies in this chain's menu, ask to leave out the added sugar. Smoothie King, veggie lemon ginger spinach, 20 ounces. Calories are 310, saturated fat, 0, carbs, 80 grams, total sugar, 60 grams, fiber, 6 grams, protein, 4 grams. Contains mango, pineapple, papaya juice blend, white grape, lemon juice blend, stevia, and organic spinach, carrots, and kale, and ginger. Why we like it? This veggie pick is found in the chain's Be Well Blends menu, which mostly offers smoothies made with whole fruit and fruit juices with no added sugars. But note that this blend contains stevia, a plant-based but highly processed sweetener, and Panera Bread, peach and blueberry smoothie. The serving size is 16 ounces. The calories are 210. It contains mango and peach purees, white grape and passion fruit, juice concentrates, unsweetened almond milk, fresh blueberries. Has 210 calories. Saturated fat of 2 grams, carbs of 49 grams, total sugars at 41 grams, fiber 4, and protein 2 grams. Why we like it? This smoothie is a good bit because it has whole fruit in it. The fruit juice with no added sugars, Panera Strawberry Banana Smoothie, is another nice option in this menu. It's made with whole milk Greek yogurt and has 7 grams of protein. Find a great washer-dryer pair. If you're looking to update your laundry room, there's no question that a matching washing machine and dryer from the same brand and model line will look great together. But there are other benefits to choosing a matched pair. Today's matching pairs have smart features, including ones that automatically sync their settings. One set, as we've seen, for example, offers a dryer that auto-detects the setting you choose on the washer and then pre-selects a drying cycle to match it. That way, whether you're doing a load of bulky bed linens or small delicates, all you need to do is transfer the items from washer to dryer and hit start. And some new stackable sets offer a connector cable that puts controls for both the washer and the dryer on the washer so that you don't have to reach up high to access the dryer's controls. Choosing both appliances from the same manufacturer can also offer an advantage when it comes to repairs and warranties, says Handel. It's just simpler to deal with one company instead of two. There can be a price advantage, too, if you're shopping for both a washer and dryer. Retailers sometimes put matching pairs on sale as a unit, so you'll pay less buying them together. One important question to consider, though, should you ever replace both your washer and dryer when only one of them breaks down? The answer depends a lot on the age of your machines. If your washer, for example, clocks out around the 10-year mark, but your 10-year-old dryer is still running, in CR member surveys we found that washers and dryers tend to last 10 years on average. It makes sense to replace both so that you can reap the benefits of the newest washer-dryer technology, including improved energy efficiency, and any potential discount you might get for purchasing a set. But if your current dryer is a few years younger than your broken washer, and you've been happy with the brand, you may wish to seek out, if possible, the closest model to your dryer from that same company. Keep in mind that the newer models might not match the look of your current dryer. It's also a good idea to check out the best-performing, most reliable washer dryers and CR's ratings, regardless of make and model. To help jumpstart your research with a purpose pair, consider the four sets shown here, many of which are made by LG, which dominates the top spots in our washer-dryer settings. Excellent front loaders are the stackable washer, the LG WM400 at $850, and an electable stackable dryer, the LG DLEX 4000 at $850, and they both got high 80s scores. Top-loading washer and dryer, the high-efficiency top-load washer from LG at $1,100, and electric dryer also $1,100 from LG. The high-efficiency top-load washer from LG, the WT700 at $800, electric dryer from LG at $800, that's the DLE, and the stackable front-load stackable washer from Samsung at WF45 at $750, and the electro-stackable dryer at Samsung at $695, and they both got low 80s or high 70s. And how about a human uniform to close us out? The U.S. Strategic Command detects and deters foreign attacks. So last year when it tweeted, the Twitter sphere went into overdrive. Had Stratcom been hacked? Was it a coded message? Neither. The command's Twitter manager was working from home when he stepped away from his computer. His young son found the open Twitter account and sent his first tweet. Driving on the German Autobahn for the first time, we kept passing signs for Einfahrt and Ausfahrt. Those must be huge city, I said to my sergeant. He politely explained, Einfahrt and Ausfahrt are German for entrance and exit. And with that, we've about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.